Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, now in depth on the books that mattered most. What's the book you remember being utterly absorbed by as a kid, slipping past the pages and into the realm of the characters in the story? For me, it was Caddy Woodlawn. A grade school teacher read a chapter a day to us. I can still remember anticipating the next day and the next chapter. And for the rest of those days, I inhabited Caddy's world. For novelist Anne Hood, that book was Little Women. Anne writes, "I fell deeper and deeper into the story. All these years later, I recognize how magical this experience truly was." So as Anne joins us, I want to hear from you about a book that you've lived inside, whether it was a book that was meaningful to you as a kid, maybe it was one you just read. Tell me the title. Tell me why. We'll post a list of this on the thread. But if you've got a book that was really meaningful to you as a young adult or a book that really ushered you into the magic of reading, I'd love to put that on our list. Maybe you came to reading late. Maybe it's a book that within the last 4 or 5 years has been really meaningful to you. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at Carrie, KerriMPR. Anne Hood is the author of The Red Thread and The Book That Matters Most, and her new book is titled Morning Star, Growing Up With Books. She's with us today from Middlebury, Vermont, where I understand you're at a writer's conference, Anne. Could you have ever imagined that when you were that young girl and loving books?
No, that would have been a dream come true. I didn't know such things existed.
Are you doing some writing there or are you speaking at the conference?
I'm actually teaching. It's the Breadloaf Writers Conference, which was started by Robert Frost. It's one of the oldest writers' conferences in the country.
Wow.
And actually, I came here as a student about 1,000 years ago and clutching the pages of my first novel, and the writer I worked with helped me get it published and launched my career. So I have quite a fondness for this place.
Yes. You know, I think it's really perfect that we're talking in what I think of as the last languorous, lazy days of summer about this, because this is the time of the year, going way back to my childhood, that I connect with doing the most fulfilling and, by the way, adventurous reading. I wondered if summer was important to you for that.
Absolutely. I grew up in Rhode Island, and summer meant going to the beach with the scratchy navy blanket my mother used to put down on the sand and riding the waves and then soaking up the sun with a book in my hand and having to be reminded to put it down to go back in the water. So reading and the ocean and summer are all very connected to me.
Mangala says on Twitter, Anne of Green Gables series, I love the red-haired little girl and the woman she grew into. My daughter loves that series now. Oh, the multi-generational thing. That's a big deal too, isn't it?
Yeah, that's great. My daughter and I shared a few years ago the Betsy Tacy books, had a similar, you know, you started when they were so young and then into adulthood, and we loved reading them together.
Call here from Marty in Albert Lee. Marty, it sounds like a teacher turned you on to reading, as with me. What's that book?
Well, most certainly she did. And I didn't know that I would become the avid reader that I am, but she gave me Brave New World and Fahrenheit 451 and Animal Farm, and that's all it took. And I have just been reading 3-4 books at a time the rest of my life.
Ah, I love that. The multi-book reader. That's what I do. Do you do that too, Anne?
Were you reading
absolutely. Books at a time?
That's why it's always a hard question. What are you reading right now? Because the list goes on and on. I have a book at every surface where I might sit in my house, you know.
A call here from Tamara in Woodbury. Hi, Tamara. What's that book for you?
It is A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline L'Engle, which I was completely obsessed with.
And why? What do you think it was that was especially affecting to you by that book?
It was a young female protagonist, and I had never seen anything like that. It's made me a lifelong sci-fi lover, and I am so excited to see the movie because I think they may actually do the story justice.
Yeah, that always makes me a little nervous, right?
Does it? Yeah. Like, will it fulfill the promise and the experience of
right? Will they get it right?
Dear? Yeah. Right.
Well, and of course, nothing ever will totally fulfill that experience, because you get to imagine that book in your head. You never get complete fulfillment. However, this looks to be a job well done.
Thanks for the call, Tamara. Good to have it. Let's talk about Little Women. And, you know, when I looked, after having read your book, I looked up the publication date of Little Women. Do you know when it was? Do you know how long it was ago, Anne?
I'm guessing like 1830 or 1860.
You're right. It was the mid-1800s.
Yeah, because it was after the Civil War, right?
What does a book like that have to say to a young girl hanging out on the beach on a scratchy navy blanket based in Rhode Island?
You know, I just realized a few days ago, in the opening pages of that book, they talk about their father being away at war. And Joe comments that, you know, he won't be home for a while, and then thinks she's too afraid to say that he may never come back. And when I read that book, my father was in the Navy in Cuba, in Guantanamo Bay, during the Cuban Missile Crisis in the Bay of Pigs. And I think that that opening page drew me in, because it said the thing I was so afraid of myself.
Because the girls were drawing tighter together, and mm-hmm. I get what weathering something that was so uncertain. That's,
yeah.
See, that's funny. I don't think of the father as being a key player
in
that novel.
That's what they talk about. You know, we can't have all the pretty things we want for Christmas because we're helping the war effort, basically.
That's right.
And and then they think he may never come home, but nobody can say it out loud. And Cuba and what was going on there in the early 60s was always in the news, and my father was there. And so I think I had this deep fear, you know, of just what they spoke of. Of course, I don't want to be too overly dramatic. I loved that family, the marches. I wanted to be one of them. You know, they got to write plays and put them on. And I don't know, they just did very cool things that were not happening in my little town in Rhode Island.
Well, you have your book with you, right?
Yes.
Would you mind just read? I want to share the delight of these paragraphs that you wrote about the meaning of Little Women. And if you just read a couple for us, that'd
okay.
be great. Thanks.
From the first line, "Christmas won't be Christmas without any presents," grumbled Joe, lying on the rug. I was hooked. With each detail, the introduction of the four March sisters, the utterance of that beloved nickname, Marmy, for their mother, the absent father away at war, the plays written and performed by the March sisters, the neighbor boy, Lori. I fell deeper and deeper into the story. All these years later, I recognize how magical this experience truly was. I wanted to live inside a book, and this was the first time I really did. "I'm going to call you Marmy," I told my mother, surely clutching Little Women, because I did not put that book down. "What? No, you're not," my no-nonsense mother said. A day later, "May I carry a baked potato to keep my hands warm and put it inside a muff?" I asked. "No, put on your mittens." Then, with a sigh, "Why are you so weird?" She had dreamed of a beauty queen daughter, a cheerleader, a popular girl. Instead, she got me, a pageant dropout after just two trophies, too clumsy to be a cheerleader or a playground star, quoting drama in real life, and wondering aloud about photosynthesis.
Anne Hood reading from her new book, Morning Star, growing up with books about from a chapter about her love of and imitation, desire to imitate the family of Little Women. If you've just tuned into the conversation, Anne is with us, and we're talking about the books that raised us in some ways and those books that remain important to us. 651-227-6000. If you get a busy signal on the phone lines, you can reach me on Twitter, and I'll try to catch as many tweets here as I can. Enrique says, "Island of the Blue Dolphins" by Scott O'Dell. You know, I've never read that book. First book.
My kids both read it in school.
Did they?
But I didn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In school? Huh.
Yeah.
Enrique says, "First book that opened my mind to the power of books and imagination." Michael says, "Orwell's 1984 had a huge impact as a YA. It made me understand just how easy it can be for others to shape our views of the world." Yeah, good takeaway on that. And then Claire says, The Giver by Lois Lowry, that often comes up in these conversations, taught me to think critically about memory and how a society remembers lessons still relevant today. And one more here, Veronica says, My brother and I were homeschooled in the woods near Tahoe. Bridge to Terabithia inspired hours of creating make-believe worlds. And that's what I love so much, Anne, about that chapter on Little Women. You wanted to live the Little Women. It wasn't enough just to be inspired and your imagination sparked. That's great.
Yeah, you want to be in the story.
All right. Yeah. Call here from Akeem in Mankato. Hi, Akeem. What's the book
hey,
for you?
Hey, how's it going?
Going well. Glad you called.
All right. My favorite book as a youth was Roots by Alex Haley.
Uh-huh.
And as I look at it, it's amazing. As I travel through the various vicissitudes of life and grown now, it's like it still rings true. It's a war against Islam. It's a war against African Americans, and nothing has changed.
The power of great literature, Akeem, right?
Yes.
That it still speaks to you decades
yes,
later.
Yes, it does. And it still remains true. So it's just amazing that y'all had this topic on today in that book. I still have a copy of the original Alex Haley. I got the first edition, and it's just
nice.
It's just tripped out.
Have you gone back to read it?
Yes. And it's amazing on how different foreigners or Muslims nowadays don't even give respect to the African-American experience as far as Islam. Everybody have rights but the people who were slaves. And it was just amazing that y'all had this topic and today. And
I'm glad you caught it. Yeah, thank you. We'll put Roots on the list. Let me grab a call here from Gay in Northeast Iowa. Hi, Gay. What's that book for you?
Coming of Age in Mississippi, Essie May autobiography of Essie May and Moody, which I read in the 60s, and I just recently reread it. As a person of mixed race, with cousins in Chicago, and no television, I didn't really understand what was going on with the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
And Essie May walks it through from 1930s to her experience, her lived experience. I still remember, I'm still haunted by dreams of the time we lived on Mr. Carter's plantation. Lots of Negroes lived on his place. Like Mama and Daddy, they were all farmers. She starts out in rural Mississippi and gets involved in the civil rights and SNCC and the voter registration, the whole thing. I just reread it like 40 years later.
I'm so glad
still,
you called.
Like your previous caller, it is amazing that nothing has changed.
Yeah. And say something about, Gay, thank you so much for that. Say something about kind of what I observed to Akeem, which is the power of literature written in great literature, written in any time, to speak to us in our time.
I think, isn't that really what makes for great literature, that it's so universal? I mean, that's why we're still going to see Shakespeare, right? And why we still read Shakespeare. It reaches across centuries, really. There's a resonance, and I talk about this in Morningstar, Growing Up with Books, that it's amazing to me that you can read a book about 19th century Russia, or about a upper-class Jewish girl in New York City, or about a small-town basketball star in Pennsylvania, and you feel like it's your story, like the writer was looking right into your soul. And that's the universality that I think the callers are talking about.
This always reminds me, I don't know if you've ever read Wendy Lesser's Why I Read. Have you had a chance to read that?
I absolutely have,
okay.
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, in one of the beginning pages, she says reading literature is a way of reaching back to something bigger and older and different. I think that's the quote.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I'd ever quite understood why, just as you've said, some of this literature from the ages still has something to say to us, but that's it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I still remember in college taking a Shakespeare course, and we read King Lear. And I remember going up to the professor, this lovely man, Warren Smith, and I had tears in my eyes because I'm very dramatic, but I had tears in my eyes because I realized that Shakespeare, writing so long ago, had said so many things that were pertinent to being growing up in the 60s and 70s, parental relationships, father-daughter relationships. And it just really hit me with King Lear that literature spans centuries and still keeps telling the truth. That matters, you know?
Now, well said. To Marianne in St. Cloud. Hi, Marianne.
Hi. I want to tell you that I almost dropped my cup of coffee when you said your favorite book was Caddy Woodlawn. That I am 76 years old, and about a year ago at 75, I thought, when we, you know, I listened to all your stories about books, and I'm thinking, why is Caddy Woodlawn still in my brain?
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, I got to figure out why she's still there. So I went to Barnes & Noble, bought Caddy Woodlawn.
They're still selling it. Glad to hear that.
Selling it.
Good.
And I read it again, and I thought, I think I know why. I read it 65 years ago when I was a tomboy girl hanging out with the boys and running around the neighborhood. And I think it was because she was so brave, and,
right.
and she helped save her friends, the Native people. And, you know, I thought, I want to be like Caddy Woodlawn. I want to have guts like her. I want to be like her. And another one that is an old one, and I want to also say, I think to teachers, I'm a former educator.
Mm-hmm.
My experience with reading, having the teacher calm us down after recess, was mm-hmm. to read a chapter from a book. Mm-hmm. It also entices children to love books.
Right.
And
yeah.
She'd do that, and you'd be waiting for it. It was like, I want to hear the next chapter.
It was a treat.
It was a treat. Okay, Heidi, another wonderful
story.
Absolutely. Good. Marianne, thank you. I'm glad you're having a cup of coffee with me this morning. Thanks for that. You know, my mother is a huge reader, Anne, and so, you know, she modeled that for me, too. So having a teacher do this and then seeing my mother devour books, it doesn't sound like your mother was a big reader.
No, my family, no one in my family was actually a big reader. They were very math-oriented, and they worked a lot. And we didn't sit around reading books. They considered me to be like an exotic bird. And all I wanted to do was read.
Well, so who was your book confidant? Because there's nothing more pleasurable, even, you know, to learn at that age, to talk about books in a, you know, in a deeper way than just about what you like about it.
Yeah, my cousin Gloria Jean, a year older, who in fact is the one who gave me Little Women to read.
That's right.
She and I devoured books and talked for hours on the phone about them, starting with Nancy Drew, going into Agatha Christie. And believe it or not, we're still doing it all these years later. One of the things we talk about most are the books we're reading.
That's great. Nancy says on Twitter, Up a Road Slowly, I've never heard of this, by Irene Hunt. She says, it gave me context for the experiences of me and friends during teens. Still think of it in times of contemplation. Let me skim up here a little bit.
Wow.
Pat says, The Phantom Toll Booth, read it daily by a fourth grade teacher. That was then, this is now. I also have three or four books at a time going. You know about that book, Anne?
I love that book, and that is one of my favorite books that I've read to my kids because they just love it. If you love language, that book just really takes you places.
I am thrilled that we're getting so many men calling and tweeting in on this.
I am too.
Men don't read that much fiction these days.
That's what they say.
Public radio men do, but
that's why we love public radio men.
I know. James says, Fight Club by Chuck Palahniuk.
Oh.
It revealed that part of what I was looking for was what defines being a man in modern society. Yeah, that makes sense. Lots of Where the Red Fern Grows. Lots of people saying that. Colleen says books, eight to nine, The Chronicles of Narnia.
Oh, of course, yes.
Nancy Drew, World Book Children's Encyclopedia. Let me grab some calls here from Josh in St. Barry's Point. Hi, Josh. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I was an avid reader as a kid and an early reader, but when I think back on it, I was in sixth grade when I read The Outsiders by S.E. Hinton.
Oh,
I think it's the first book that really made its way into my interior, because I immediately read all three of her other books that she had published at that time, right after that. And it just, I reread it because my son actually read it 30 years later. He is not an avid reader, but it really made a strong impression on him at around the same age. And I think she just has a way of capturing kind of the fragility and sensitivity and kind of the potential fierce bonding between young boys turning into men. It caught something, and it still resonates, even though it's very specific to a time and place, even today.
You know what's interesting about those books, Josh, is exactly what you said. She's a young woman writing about this bonding of young boys, and that I don't think she ever wrote anything after those books. Did she, Anne? Do you know?
I think she did write one other book. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure she did. But, you know, she wrote The Outsiders when she was, what, 15 or 16?
It's just unbelievable.
And so she was so in that world of which she wrote. And my daughter, who's 13, had to read it. That was last summer's reading. This summer was To Kill a Mockingbird. But when she said she had to read The Outsiders, I thought, is that going to translate to, you know, to today? And she loved it. Her whole class loved it. So there's something about that book, Josh, that really touches people.
Call here from Shelley in Scandia. Hi, Shelley.
Hi.
Hi. What's the book for you? What do you want to say?
Well, I'm thrilled to be listening to this, because every one of those books that gets mentioned, I go, oh, yeah, that's right. I felt that way. Oh, yeah, that's right. I felt that way.
Right.
But for me, it was always the series books. I love the series. I love that progression. You could spend a whole summer working your way through a series, even at a young age. It's kind of like the binging that we do now on TV and stuff like that.
Right.
But what I wanted to say, my comments related to my experiences as a child, a young adult, and then as a parent. And my kids are in their mid to late 20s. It was interesting to me when they were in that age where they were enthralled and just captivated by books, or, you know, Harry Potter and the like, is that it was so interesting to me to go back and read those books, read the books that they were reading then, whether they were part of my childhood or not, to really engage in that world that they were entering in. And it was kind of cool. And at a time when you don't necessarily have a lot of insight into what your kids are thinking,
yeah,
it's just a really trip. It's a really cool trip to read the book and then think, oh, wow, I can relate to this, or I can understand what you're thinking. It's just kind of a, I don't know, kind of a freaky engagement level.
Really good point.
Anyway.
I sensed, Anne, that you, so it sounds like you've done some of that with your daughter's reading.
Absolutely. In fact, we just finished the fourth of a series called The Penderwicks. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I'm not.
These books are gentle and old-fashioned, but we love them. They're new books, but they just talk about this sweet time in this family of four daughters. The mom has died. In one of the books, the dad remarries, and more children are added to the family. And they just have small misadventures that kind of reflect larger things. And so that has been a wonderful series that we just finished reading together.
Emily says on Twitter, I still call my mother Marmy.
Her mother led her. I'm jealous.
The book for me was Anne of Green Gables. Here's something else that I was thinking about with this. And it comes from a conversation I had with Anne Patchett when she was here for our literary series, Talking Volumes. We were talking about how, you know, a lot of these books that we loved, the authors didn't do kind of what you're doing today, Anne, and what I'm sure you've done for other books, go on a big book tour, talk a lot about the books, you know, become very identifiable with those books. And I want you to, Anne and I started talking about Elena Ferrante and how she wanted to be separated from those books. And it didn't mean that the power of those books were diminished at all. Okay, so listen to what she has to say about this.
If you have the author present, if you have me here on this stage, you, the audience, think that I have the right answer, or that the book is about me, or that I'm going to give you some key that will give you a better understanding of the book, when in fact, every single thing I've got, everything that's good and interesting and smart about me is in this book. Everything I have to say about this book is in this book. I am at this point a distraction.
Well, see, we didn't need that with a lot of these books that we're loving as kids.
That's right.
What do you think
that's
of
right.
what
they came
she
to
says.
Us in a pure form, right?
Right?
And we just had the book themselves. Yeah, the book itself.
I mean, you feel compelled, don't you, when you write a novel to go out and do a book tour around it, even though you probably feel like Anne does, I said everything I have to say in that book.
I know. It is funny. But I do think, you know, I have a bit of a curiosity about how writers came to be writers and what their process is and how they wrote the book that I've just read. So I think there is something interesting about listening to a writer talk about writing, but not as a key to the book that they're talking about,
right,
but more about the key to this craft that we do, you know?
I don't think I'd have a job if writers weren't willing to.
I don't know, a writer who doesn't want to be on the radio.
No, I love the fact that people like you are willing to come, you know, participate in the world of ideas. It isn't about, and then this happened in the plot, and then this happened. You know, those best interviews are not that. But
exactly. I mean, someone just told me this quote that the writer Gene Rist said, that literature is like a lake. And there's some pretty big names that make that lake, but there's a lot of little rivers and tributaries that feed that lake, and I'm happy to be part of the feeding of it. You know, I'm happy to be one of those little tributaries.
Right. Sarah says on Twitter, Nancy Drew, oh, I love the Nancy Drew series.
Nancy.
Loved it. Had everyone.
Read every one of them.
Same here, Sarah says. Nancy Drew taught me to pay attention to little details. And if a car is behind me for too long, I better memorize that license plate number. She still does. To the phones, to Lisa in Minneapolis. Hey, Lisa, what does this mean to you?
Oh, I was really sort of a promiscuous, voracious reader as a child. Uh-huh. I mean, I read anything that went past me slowly. So, but the book that absolutely turned me into a historical fiction reader was my mother's favorite book called Kristen Lovren's Daughter. Hmm. And it was by Sigurd Undset, who won the Nobel Prize in 1928. Hmm. But I read it when I was 14, and I just loved it. It was the most gorgeous love story. And this beautiful girl in this backwater and this incredibly sexy, dark stranger who comes into town and totally seduces her away from the man that her parents have picked for her as a loving and kind partner. And he's sort of fat, and he's kind of blonde, dishwater blonde, and he's, you know, he's a really nice, boring guy. And I just loved it when she ran away with this dark, gorgeous stranger.
What's the name of this book, Lisa? I feel like I need to read it now.
Kristen Lovren's Daughter.
Okay. Really good.
Wow, I've never
like
heard
I said,
of
it's
this
by,
book.
It's by Sigurd Undset. And there's two translations.
Okay.
Read the Tina Nunnally translation. Don't read the really boring one.
Lisa, I'm really glad that you mentioned reading promiscuously because, wow, Anne, the Herod experiment. Whoa.
Did you read that book? Am I alone here?
I never read that. I read Harold Robbins at a way too young age, but I never read the Herod experiment. What's the story with that?
Oh, so it's a fictitious college where everything is done in the nude and you have co-ed roommates and have to sleep in the same bed and then just see what happens and write about it in your journal. That's the college. And I just was aghast, astounded, titillated.
And totally entranced, I know.
Yeah, you
exactly,
said
exactly, right?
Wow.
So here's the thing, and I'm sure you've thought about this. When you and I were reading way beyond, you know, where we naturally would have. My mother never said no, basically, to any book for me in the library or anything. Sounds like with you. We didn't have a lot of the incredible YA literature available to us. So it seemed natural to read beyond and read widely and adventurously.
That's exactly right. I mean, when my library opened, I was in the fifth grade. I can still remember the first visit, my father taking me there. There was the children's section on the right, and that had like baby books, you know, little kid books. And then there was the vast adult section. Well, you can guess which way I turned. I went left and just started taking books off the shelves and reading them in this haphazard way. And that meant that I read In Cold Blood way before I should have.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't sleep with the lights off until I was about 25 after that.
But that's okay. I think what was behind my mother's ideas that I should just read what I want was, what's the worst that can happen? She'll come to me and ask me questions about it.
That's right.
And she'll be confused.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's okay. Yeah. So what if your daughter at this age wanted to read the Herod experiment? What would you do?
You know, I actually think I might let her.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like you said, there just would be questions, but I think she'd be kind of, in her words, grossed out by it.
Yeah.
Not as intrigued as I was.
Byron in Minneapolis. Hey, Byron, hi.
Hello.
Hi. What's the book for you?
Several books. The Tom Swift series of kids' science fiction, like Tom Swift and his electric robot or atomic robot. And the other book that I took as gospel literally at that time that I now see as mostly fiction, the Bible. The science fiction series books caused me to think openly, I think, attracted me to a more open mind. And I grew up loving science and read science fiction all the time and hard science. And I'm retired, but I work as a scientist. And the other, as a young kid who was brought up as a Southern Baptist, caused me to question reality or question what was taught to me as reality.
Boy.
And I became, I escaped from that, thank goodness, and became a confirmed anti-theist who believes that our world would be a better place if people would deal in reality rather than in fiction.
Byron, I appreciate the call, and I have to say goodbye to Anne, and I hate to do that. Anne, I hope you'll come back. This has been really fun.
Oh, I would love to. Thank you so much.
For
it was great
too.
Talking books with you and everyone.
You too. Anne Hood is the author of the newest book, Morningstar, Growing Up with Books. We'll create a list. We'll put it on the thread, and you can continue to tweet me. I want to hear about the titles that were meaningful to you as a young reader. Twitter, @Kerri, KERRI, MPR.